Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, August 19th, welcome friends, come on in to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Oh yeah.
You saw the jam?
Yeah, I like that.
A little shoulder movement there.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Shoulders are still. The floor is yours, Cherry.
Yes. Today on the show, we're talking about the rise of buy now, pay later apps. You've probably heard of them. Klarna, Affirm, Afterpay, to name a few.
Klarna.
Yeah. They've become, Avi had a whole thing of like, what is this name? What is this app name?
I've since found out that it's Swedish. It makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So we're talking about the apps. They become very popular alternatives to traditional credit cards. It allows people to pay for things in smaller installments. They promise instant approval and in many cases, zero interest. And for many Americans, especially young people, it's a budgeting tool that they use for everything from buying a sofa to buying concert tickets, groceries, and even utility bills. And for others, it's become a new kind of debt. And there are some financial traps there. So today we'll look at how buy now, pay later works, who's using it, the business model, some of the pros and cons. And we'll be joined by two experts. You probably heard of them. Wharton's Wendy De La Rosa and Michelle Singletary of The Washington Post. Looking forward to that. And we also want to hear from you, our listeners at home, on the road, elsewhere. Our questions of the day are, do you use buy now, pay later apps? What do you buy with them? And why do you think they've become so popular? Our number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And hello to everybody on YouTube. Keep those comments coming in the live chat.
I was so out of the loop on this. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about this topic before yesterday.
Wow.
It just was not on my radar. And nearly half of Americans have used.
Yeah.
Buy now, pay later.
I have used it. I bought a Peloton bike, and that's how I was first introduced to it. And they used it as the finance option, and it was great.
Do you like the Peloton?
I love my Peloton.
Nice.
Yeah. And
what's your preferred ride? Is that the wrong question?
I like a 30-minute ride,
nice.
And I have, you know, some.
I don't know anything about Peloton
either. But now you've learned a lot.
Right. That's true. But I haven't done the prep for a Peloton show.
I'm answering all your questions. I'm answering all his questions.
I don't know anything about anything. I do know we have a trail of local news stories
absolutely.
To get to. Let's start with a train-related story as we go off the rails here on Studio 2. So, could the SEPTA death spiral lead to big problems for Amtrak? It sure seems possible. Here's the backstory. Right now, SEPTA pays Amtrak to run regional rail trains on tracks that Amtrak owns. If SEPTA does not get more money by January, it will cancel those regional rail lines that run on those Amtrak rails, and thus, Amtrak's not going to get the rental fees from SEPTA anymore. It's roughly $70 million. U.S. Congressman Brendan Boyle told the Inquirer that if Amtrak loses those fees, it will cancel its train between Philly and Harrisburg. Amtrak has not confirmed that yet, but it did say SEPTA cuts could really harm those services. And by the way, there's a downstream effect here, which is that it could also mean fewer Amtrak trains between Philly and New York, which is a major moneymaker for Amtrak.
Yeah, I mean, this transportation failure that is happening will have a real domino effect. And Congressman Boyle said this is crisis mode. That's what he told the Philadelphia Inquirer. And so interesting, because Amtrak uses the money that it gets from those rental fees, you said $70+ million, they use it to pay for capital investments, for their electricity, right? And the loss of these payments could lead to deterioration of infrastructure. So people don't really think about that.
It cascades.
It's a cascading effect. And what's crazy is that this is the train that our lawmakers who are from our region, they use to get to Harrisburg every single week to do their job. So I know they're feeling this, or going to feel this, if the Keystone line gets canceled. And, you know, we'll also have fewer trains from New York to Philly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to have a ripple effect all up and down the Mid-Atlantic coast.
We had SEPTA general manager Scott Sauer on the show, I think in late April, and he actually explained why these are the lines they're going to cut. It's much easier to shut down and disentangle from these lines that they just rent the track on than to cancel lines where you own the track. That's for logistical and financial reasons. So there's a reason why these are the lines that are the first to go. Of course, the knock-on effect is that it hurts another rail service in the region, which is not SEPTA's, you know, first priority here. They're trying to get their own books in order, but it's an unfortunate side effect of all this, if it happens.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about the budget, you know, coming up this week. But this is a real problem, and we need people to put their thinking caps on and figure this thing out, because the domino effect, I mean, I don't want to see the last domino fall. We gotta fix it. So, second story. A new Rocky statue is set to be installed at Philadelphia International Airport, which has me and a lot of people asking why in the world do we need three Rocky statues in Philadelphia?
We have three?
Yeah, let me break it down, okay? In case you did not know, Philly has a statue of Rocky at the base of the Art Museum.
I know about
that
there
one. But there is also a statue of Rocky at the top of the Art Museum steps. That statue is on loan from Sylvester Stallone, his personal art stash, by the way. It was supposed to be there only temporarily, but it has been there 8 months longer than expected, which is why Inquirer columnist and friend of Studio 2, Stephanie Farr, wrote a very interesting column that came out today where she rightly questioned why it was still there, that statue that was at the top of the art museum. And she asked whether we need more statues of Rocky Balboa, a.k.a. Sylvester Stallone. Like, do we? Because it's basically Sylvester Stallone statues.
Well, it's his likeness, but it's the character he invented and played. It's a statue of Rocky to me than it is. It's not like a tribute to him.
And let me just be clear. No one's hating on Rocky, okay? Because
well,
Rocky,
you are
people,
a little bit, clearly.
I like the movies, and I like Rocky Balboa, but I do wonder, do we need so many statues of him in the city of Philadelphia?
It's a bit much.
It's a lot.
I'm okay with there being one at the airport as well as one at the base of the art museum, but it looks a little desperate when you go to the base of the art museum and you see like two of them.
And then you got to run to the top of the steps to high five the second one.
It feels like a bit much. Like we're laying it on a bit thick with the Rocky.
I
have long been of the opinion that we should, you know, care less about Rocky and more about Joe Frazier,
Thank
for
you.
Instance.
Shout out to Joe Frazier.
I do think, however, we've lost that fight. Rocky is clearly the international symbol of Philadelphia. I don't think we can change that at this point. So you put one in the airport, people get to snap a picture. I don't think there's a ton of harm there.
But three statues?
I have more of an issue with the two at the art museum. It just comes off as we're trying too hard.
Yeah, and
we're forcing Rocky on you.
And Philly doesn't need to do that. We don't need to try that hard for Rocky, okay? And we'll leave it.
How about a story now about a real sports person?
Yes.
That actually exists in the world. This item caught our eye. USA Today reported today that the Sixers have hired Ariana Andonian to be the general manager for the Delaware Bluecoats, which is the G League or minor league affiliate of the Philadelphia 76ers. This would make Andonian the lead player, personnel, day-to-day decision maker for the Bluecoats. She would not be the first female G League general manager. Someone else got there first in 2020, and there have been a handful since. But it does seem like there's this pipeline building for women as key decision makers in the world of basketball. I will note, there has never been a female general manager in the NBA. This is the G League. It's right below the NBA. Yeah. But perhaps Andonian could be the one to break that glass ceiling. She's been a fast riser in the NBA world. In 2018, according to The Athletic, she was the only female scout for an NBA team. So someone who's got trailblazer potential here.
Yeah, I love it. The G League is a feeder organization for the NBA. So she's probably being groomed for something bigger there. And I can see her growing. She's already, you know, has a job with the Sixers, vice president of player personnel, which she'll still have working for the Bluecoats. But by the way, it sounds like a lot, but I need them to win. Okay. And I'm going to say this, and I'm all for breaking glass ceilings. I'm going to say this.
We couldn't keep this one positive.
I want to keep it positive.
Well, but that's
why we're bringing her in, right? To get the W's. Because the Bluecoats right now, they're ranked 13 out of 16 in the Eastern Conference. Maybe she'll bring in some folk.
Well, presumably that was last season.
That was last season. Yeah. So this is a chance for her to
wait, you can't
really
be criticizing the Bluecoats if you don't even know when they play. The season is not on right now.
I've gone to Bluecoats games.
I got
to
set a bar.
It's amazing.
I got to set a bar. You got to know when they play before you criticize the
success
of the team.
I know, but I'm just saying, I've been to games and I had a ball. I really loved it. Cody is amazing. But I just, you know, I just want them to.
And Cody's the mascot.
Yeah, the mascot.
I'll give you credit for knowing that because I did not know that. Cody?
Yes, Cody. Like,
Cody, what is he? Is he a...
He's like, you know...
What's his character?
He's a blue person.
He's a person?
It's like a horse.
A horse. That would make sense.
Okay. Cody. Yeah.
Shout out to Cody. Shout out to History Makers. We're going to talk about buy now, pay later apps on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to a show that we think is still called Studio 2.
It is.
We'll be right back.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Buy now, pay later. On the surface, it doesn't sound like anything revolutionary. After all, Americans have been buying things in installments or on credit for a very long time. But underneath that plain name is a product that may change commerce.
These buy now, pay later loans often come interest-free. Plus, they're incredibly easy to access, allowing folks to pay for everyday items like groceries in chunks rather than all at once. This loan format is growing fast, and the companies offering them think they can challenge or even replace credit cards.
This hour, we'll explore why buy now, pay later has become so popular, what that popularity says about our economy, and what pitfalls this could create for consumers. With us to discuss is Wendy De La Rosa, Assistant Professor of Marketing at the Wharton School. Wendy, welcome back to the program.
Always nice to be here.
And Michelle Singletary, Personal Finance Columnist at the Washington Post. Also great to see you again, Michelle.
Yeah, thank you for having me back.
And for our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, we invite you to chime in to the conversation. Our questions of the day are, do you use buy now, pay later apps? What do you buy with them? And also, why do you think they've become so popular? The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, drop your comments in the live chat.
Wendy, I want to start with you. Explain briefly for the audience what makes buy now, pay later distinct from other forms of credit, loans, or just buying things in installments. What distinguishes this financial product?
Well, I think there's fundamentally three key features that sort of isolate what we're calling buy now, pay later, or BNPL for short. The first is that they typically come in very, very short installments. So the most popular method is interest-free. Right, so it's 0%, which is very appealing to people. You pay 25% of the item today, and then you have three more payments spaced out for 2 weeks.
This is the pay in four method.
The pay in four method, which is very popular for people because it typically ties to people's payment frequency. Right, we either get paid weekly or biweekly, and so it's easier to budget. And I think the third critical piece, which is often not talked about enough, it's just how easy it is to use and how incorporated it is to use. So, for example, unlike a credit card where you get a statement, you have to log in, you have to make a payment, it automatically gets deducted from your checking account balance. So you don't even have to think about it when you're paying it. But even when you're making a purchase, the process itself is so smooth. And we can talk about later why that could be so nefarious at times.
So unlike applying for a loan, there's not a big process I have to go through to get a BNPL to buy my groceries.
No, it's typically, you know, less than a minute.
Wow.
Right? And
wow.
It's so integrated now into the checkout process.
Yeah, it's so interesting. When I bought my Peloton, they offered it to me. I don't even know how. And then it ended up working out. And I don't even know. I don't remember filling out an application
right.
or really doing anything to get access to this. And so, Michelle, I want to bring you into the conversation because a lot of who's using this and what are people typically using this buy now, pay later for?
Well, studies have shown that younger generations are using it more often, and that makes sense. They tend not to have enough credit history to have a decent credit score. So if they do get a credit card, the interest rate is going to be high. And it's really targeted to that generation. And that's therein is one of the problems that because it's so easy, people are not necessarily thinking, is this something that I can afford, even if you're going to stretch it over 4 or 6 payments.
So if it's 0% interest, though, it sounds like no good, risk, right? Wendy. So right. How are the companies making money off this? Let's imagine a scenario where actually I just pay it straight off. I buy it in the pay in four method.
Right.
I hit all my payments. And now the company just gave me some money and they never made anything off me. So how do they make money?
So this is a great question. And I think we have to think about the fact that there are many different models. But the most popular model is the retailer is essentially giving a kickback to the buy now, pay later mm-hmm. companies. Because we have to understand that we are a product of our environments, right? We don't just live in a vacuum. And amazing research in the Journal of Marketing Research has shown that just having the option of buy now, pay later makes people more likely to buy. So that it makes them more likely to just buy anything at all, that extensive margin. But on top of that, it makes them even more likely to spend more. So if I'm more willing to buy something that's $20, I'm now even more likely to buy something that's $40. And so from a retailer perspective, that's actually pretty meaningful. And so that's the main sort of profit model. With that said, a lot of the publicly traded companies are not necessarily trading a profit right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to make sure I understand that so everyone listening understands. So the company, the retailer says, I will pay you, loan company, let's say a firm, a percentage
right.
of what I'm going to make on this sale. And what you're giving me is access to a customer I might not have had access to, or you are encouraging that customer to spend more with my company than they otherwise might have spent.
Exactly. It's just higher revenue. That's the name of the game. And so when we understand that the fundamental reason why these companies are there is to make us spend more.
Yeah. Then we get into some of the problems, but let's hold that for a second.
Exactly. Yeah.
I want to read a couple comments. Ivana on YouTube says, I love buy now, pay later. Mm-hmm. As a part-time worker and student, it helps me tremendously for groceries such as Walmart, especially because the cost of basic groceries are extremely expensive these days. Mary says, I have used the buy now, pay later to purchase clothes and shoes when they are 50% off. It's great, but beware if you get behind. You will be in a real life nightmare. And so, you know, Michelle, I want to go back to you because I wanted to kind of go into what people use this for, because I mentioned some of the big ticket items that people would typically use installment payments for. A lot of times furniture stores would offer you the interest free, you know, installment payments, but people are using buy now, pay later for a host of things because it's so easy. So can you explain the ease of it? Like, what type of information do you need to give up? And then sort of like, why do you think it just becomes so ubiquitous in people's ability to sort of like put it on, for example, groceries and utilities and burritos and all these things?
Yeah, so they're using it on all the things that you mentioned. Initially, the pitch from these companies was that people could buy big ticket items.
Yeah.
And now they're buying concert tickets, they're buying clothes and shoes. You can get food delivered and pay it in 4 installments. And it's a hard pushback to say, don't use it to buy groceries because people have to have food on their table. But the problem is they're not really buying it just for groceries. And the cautionary tale is that if you have to take 4 payments to buy that dress, you probably can't afford that dress. Even though it's being taken directly out of your bank account. You know, there's this thing called delayed gratification. And if you had to pay cash for certain things and you don't have it at that moment, then you're going to delay buying it sometimes often means that you don't end up buying it at all because you realize you just don't have the money. And that is my concern. You can have multiple of these loans because almost everything that I buy now, there is an option for this, from an airline ticket to if I'm on Amazon, just about everything. And that is very, very concerning to me. You need to pause, even with groceries, because people overspend in the grocery store. There's the basic food that you need, but if you can stretch it out over four, instead of following your grocery list and sticking to a budget, you might go over that budget. Mm-hmm. And that is the problem with the ease of being able to get these buy now, pay later loans.
And my follow-up question with the ease part is it comes right out of your account. And I want you to kind of use and dig into this, Wendy, because most people, they use their credit cards where you have to affirmatively go and right. pay your credit card bill. Like you get a statement, you can look at all the things you paid and you have to pay.
Right.
But they go right into your account and get the money. How does this help, hurt, yes. impact a person's cash flow?
Yeah. So one of the things I want to sort of take a step back and recognize that every action has a reaction. So part of the reason for the popularity of buy now, pay later companies is to some extent a function of the Credit Card Act of 2009 that made it harder for young people under 21, to get access to credit cards. Mm. Now, I think we can all agree, like, maybe that's a good thing. An 18-year-old shouldn't have access to, you know, $40,000 credit line on a credit card. But as a result of that, right, the demand for impulsive spending doesn't go away. We don't change.
So create a vacuum there.
And created it's a vacuum, yeah. And now it got created. And now we have all these buy now, pay later companies because they do not want to be regulated like a lender, right? They do not want to provide statements. They do not want to give you an overall picture of how many buy now, pay later loans, because it is credit you have taken out. The way to sort of get around that is to automatically take the money from your checking account. Mm-hmm. So people don't receive statements. It's very hard to get an aggregate picture of how much you owe across not just one buy now, pay later company,
but
multiple.
It sounds like you're saying it complicates financial planning for a lot of people because there isn't this like one number I can look at my credit card and see, whoa, I spent $3,000 this month or whatever. It's more coming out in chunks and then it clouds the big picture of what you're actually spending and what you're actually buying.
That's
what you're concerned
That's
about.
That's right. Now, there is a positive to this,
yeah.
which is delinquencies on buy now, pay later are much lower than delinquencies on credit card payments.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because it's coming out of your checking account balance, right? You don't have the option to say, no, I don't want to pay this right now.
To spend way above your means the way you can with a credit card.
Well, it automatically comes out. So the only way that you have a non-payment is to fundamentally not have money anymore in your account.
Well, so let me get a lot of people are commenting who use these services
yes.
and really appreciate them. I want to read a couple of those comments. Adonis on Facebook says BNPL helps a lot of folks out.
Mm-hmm.
Kara on emails us, I have used Affirmed a few times now, and it is wonderful and easy to use. My most recent purchase was for electrical components for my vintage camper renovation. By the way, Kara, I would love to get a look at that. Sounds amazing. I like the option of payments because even if I technically have the money, it would drain a huge chunk of my savings. So I feel good not having the sticker shock all at once. Building off those comments from Kara and Adonis, let me ask you, Michelle. A lot of folks, I do think, see this as a good alternative to another arguably predatory industry, which is the credit card industry. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a safer way of spending money that I don't want to spend right now than putting it on a credit card. Help us sort through that.
So it's just that I know everybody likes it because it's the ease, but I think the last person saw it avoids a sort of sticker shock. But that sticker shock is a way to make you pause. A lot of these purchases are unnecessary. A lot of these purchases are people who might need to be building up their emergency fund or saving for their retirement or saving to send their kids to college. And the easier they make it for you to spend, the easier it is for you not to do what you need to do to strengthen your financial life. I don't like things to be easy for people. I want you to suffer, because in that suffering, meaning that pause before that purchase, you might think, okay, I can't afford this right now because I don't have a very good emergency fund. Or what if you lose your job in the next week? You know, we've had a lot of job cuts. And so pausing, making it harder. I was a champion of the change in the credit card rule because we saw all these college students with these credit cards that they couldn't pay. And they're graduating not only with student loan debt, but then with college a credit card debt. It's the same thing with these loans. I teach financial literacy. I have a program at my church where about 200 people go through every year. I see people's real budgets, and it's horrifying, the lack of money that people have to run their financial life. And this ease of this is very, very concerning to me. And I know people like it, but just because you like it doesn't mean it's good for you. You know, chocolate and ice cream and all that is good, but it's not good for you all the time.
I like the big tub of cheese balls, by the way. That's the one I can't resist. Delicious. Sorry, go ahead, Wendy.
Well, I was going to say I have a slightly different take than Michelle. I love what hearing you speak, because you're like, the suffering is good. I have a slightly different take in that I think that people should take a hard look at themselves and ask themselves, how would my grandma characterize me? Would she characterize me as someone who's financially responsible, or would she characterize me as someone who's not? Because as a business school professor, it is hard for me to say to people, don't take up a 0% interest loan. Like that is hard to say.
Because it's a rational thing to do.
Keep
more of your money in your bank account longer, or in your investments longer. I mean, I know we're talking about short periods here, but it's not nothing.
It matches the timing of your payments. It comes automatically out of your checking account. Your likelihood for default is lower. We know all of these things. But one of the things psychologically, now we're getting into the how we fundamentally think. We tend to think of ourselves in the future as a perfect version of ourselves. In the future, I'm going to work out more. In the future, I'm going to call my mother more. In the future, right, we all turn into our Beyoncés. But
yes, we do.
But I want you to ask yourself, like, your future self is not different from you right now. And if you know that you're somebody who has problem with overspending, if you know that you have gotten into trouble in the past with credit card debt, if you know that this is not you because your grandma wouldn't characterize you as someone who's financially responsible, then maybe this is just not the product for you. And then I think all of the things that Michelle said are spot on, right? Delete those apps from your phone. Make yourself pause for at least a week before making that purchase. Institute all of these things. But if you're somebody who, for you, this is just a way in which it matches the timing of your bills, like you know that you're somebody who pays off their credit card at the end of every month, this is actually a good financial product.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to put the phone number out there and invite our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere to call in and participate in the conversation. Our questions are, do you use Buy Now, Pay Later apps? What do you buy with them? And why do you think they've become so popular? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for those of you on YouTube, keep those comments coming. We're also on Facebook today. And we have David, who says, I would rather use credit. Credit cards often have stronger fraud protection, dispute resolution, and purchase insurance. BNPL apps sometimes don't offer the same level of protection. And so I want to, you know, talk about the 0% interest, because, you know, I used it for my Peloton, because during the pandemic, it took 8 weeks for your bike to come, right? And so, you know, you don't want to pay up front and not have your product. So it made sense, right, to pay it in installments. And but you've called this a debt trap, Michelle, the 0% interest. And I want to talk about some of the patterns, like the stacking of the loan, some of the missed payment stuff that people might not think about when they're, because of the ease of use of some of these payment, you know, plans like Afterpay and all that. Can you talk about some of the traps that exist when you use these types of loans and that people may not see when they just automatically kind of sign up?
Well, I think one of the traps is that the stacking of the loans, because all these different retailers have them, you may not be keeping track of it. And so at that moment, that purchase seems affordable. But when you stack them all together and then your paycheck hits and, you know, hundreds of dollars are gone, you're like, wait a minute. Oh, you're clutching your pearls at that point. And then again, you know, overspending on things. Like, I'll be asking you about that Peloton bike. Like, how much is in your emergency fund?
If it's been paid off for years. I'm paid off, Michelle.
You know, that's a very expensive bike. Can't you just go walk around the park? I'm just saying.
It was a pandemic.
But see, that's what I'm saying.
And it was cold.
That's why, you know, I would do a deeper dive, not to get all into your business. But the other thing is about returns. So if you decide that you want to return it, it can be a little bit harder because they've already taken the money. And so you just sort of have to look at those kinds of things. I am the kind of person that is looking at a lot of the psychology of how people spend. And because I see people's budgets all the time, I understand that what looks good on paper, even those 0% offers, it looks good from a math perspective. But oftentimes they count on a great percentage of consumers not paying off in time. For example, if you got a 0% for 15 months or 18 months, after that period is over, if you haven't paid it off, and some of those deals, all of that interest gets put back from the day, the first day you bought that item. After that 18 months or 15 months, it might have been 0%. And then it goes to like 29%. So do you really think about this, you all. Do you really think these financial companies are doing anything in your benefit? They are not. They are in there to make money off of you. They are not giving you anything free. They do not want to, they do not necessarily care about your bottom line. I mean, it is capitalism. They're in the business to make money. But if you understand that, you have to take the position of, they are after my money. And so if they know that you're going to spend more because you can pay it in four and payments or six payments, who's really benefiting from that? It's like why gift cards are so popular. Have you ever gotten a gift card and gone to the store and only bought what was on that gift card?
Right.
Very rarely. If it's a $25 gift card, you got to spend $30 to put it, to change it in. And if you got money left on the gift card, what happens? It's in your drawer because you got $10 left on that gift card and you forget about it. Who wins in that situation? The companies. And so I am on the side of the consumers of making sure that you don't fall for the trap that they're giving you something free. There is nothing free.
So it seems like the big concern that both of you have is that this greases the wheels of commerce. It just makes it easier to spend. But I think companies writ large would say, like, that's our job. Our job is to make all of this easier, more frictionless for you. That's why online shopping exists. There's so many services that make it easier to buy things. And oftentimes that convenience is legitimately helpful to us. So why wouldn't we categorize BNPL that way, Wendy?
Well, I think we have to take a step back, and I agree with you. Every company is getting smarter, faster, more efficient at getting you to part with your money. Right? Like, that is the reality of the world.
But sometimes I want to part with my money.
Yeah. And sometimes we do.
I do need things, after all.
But we have to recognize that the commentary that one of your viewers made is such an important one. We live in a society where we need consumer protections. And so our Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually put out guidance last year and trying to treat buy now, pay later as a loan so that you have the ability to dispute, so that you have the ability to make claims, so that you have the ability to have maximums on the interest rate that they'll charge you or the fees that they'll charge you if you make a late payment. With that said, with the change of administration that has now been on pause, but states like New York, for example, have sort of stepped up. So all of that is real. And there is such a high demand, right? One in two U.S. consumers have used buy now, pay later in one way, shape, or form. So clearly there is consumer demand for this. With that said, we have to recognize that we have to build our own fortress for financial well-being. Every single company does not care about your long-term self. Right. The only person that cares about your long term self is you, your family, maybe your grandmother. Right. And so like
grandma again. Yeah.
Right. And so if that's the case, then you have to build your own environment to say, how do I protect myself?
Yeah.
Well, let me read in one more comment before we go to break. And this will be a question we can tee up for the other side. Tyler from Media asks, how do the BNPL companies use your credit
That's
score?
The big topic
I
right
once
there.
Wanted to pay, but I froze all of my credit reports and it did not go through. The interaction with your credit score is something that's evolving
yes.
in this
yes.
landscape. So yes. we want to talk about that on the other side of this break. You are listening to Studio 2 on WHYY. We're talking about BNPL, Buy Now, Pay Later. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are looking at the rising use of Buy Now, Pay Later apps like Klarna, Afterpay, and Affirm. People are using them to pay for everything from big ticket items like furniture to everyday items like groceries or even utilities. And we're talking about whether Buy Now, Pay Later could replace credit cards, what some of the pitfalls and some of the pros as well. And let me reintroduce our guest. We have Wendy De La Rosa, Assistant Professor of Marketing at the Wharton School. We also have Michelle Singletary, Personal Finance Columnist at the Washington Post.
Our phone lines are open, as are the email inboxes. Do you use Buy Now, Pay Later apps? What do you buy? Why do you think they've become so popular? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat. Before the break, Michelle, we had a listener who wanted to know about how credit scores are impacted or not impacted by taking out these loans. Paint the picture for us.
So right now, they're not reported. First of all, if you make on-time payments, they're not being reported. There is a trend to now report when you are in default. So FICO's latest model, so FICO is the credit company, credit scoring company that most lenders use. So their latest iteration of that system will include Buy Now, Pay Later. Now, not all lenders are incorporating that or buying that new model. So it hasn't quite filtered into the credit scoring system right now. So my concern is it has to be both sides of that equation. If they're going to report the defaults, they should report the on-time payments, because the on-time payments then will not have a positive or negative impact because they're not being put in your credit files. So we don't want the negative to go in and not the positive. And they are loans. So as Wendy mentioned, the CFPB was trying to put this in place before the new administration, which basically decimated that agency, that consumer watchdog. And so now we don't have anybody watching it. And if they are going to be putting it in the credit files, it has to be both sides, positive and negative information. And that's going to cause some problems for those who are who can't pay them. If they already have trouble qualifying for credit, and these are easier way for them, and now that information is in their credit file, it's going to make it difficult for them, and their credit scores could go down.
Yeah, it raises some red flags to me that the agreement, originally you think that it's not going to impact your credit, and then the rules change and it does. By the way, I want to bring in a caller. We have Carmen, who's calling in from the Schuylkill Expressway on the line.
How's traffic, Carmen?
How you doing, Carmen? You're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I didn't know if I have to turn down my radio. I think I do.
Oh, yeah. Can you
hear me?
We can hear you,
Carmen. Go ahead.
What's your question?
Maybe not.
Yes. What's your question or comment?
All right. So for years, and I'm going to tell you my age without telling you my age, but for years we've been trying to get rid of the middleman, and this Buy Now, Pay Later seems like it added a middleman. And I'm actually on my way to a Best Buy to find out if they have this policy, Buy Now, Pay Later. Because if they do, I want to know what my discount is for buying now and paying now. Because I don't need that middleman. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, I get it. I totally see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Thank you. Carmen calling in from the Schuylkill Expressway.
Can I ask a question based off of that? Because Carmen's talking about this idea that, you know, there's these intermediaries in our transactions. And at some point in time, right, none of us had credit cards, right? We didn't have these things with these magnetic stripes that allowed us to pay at the end of the month. And then a lot of us got them. And that certainly must have changed our economy on a macro level. If this product proliferates the way the credit card did, where like lots and lots of us are using this mechanism to pay for things, give us a sense, Wendy, of how that changes the economy writ large.
Well, I think there's like two critical pieces for us to think about. One, the biggest piece of the puzzle when we think about our GDP is consumer spending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's 70% of our GDP. Just the fact when you introduce a buy now, pay later option that increases spending, that should, in theory, increase our GDP. However, right, as people who care about the economy, we don't just care about the economy today. We care about our economy in the long term. And so if that means that more and more people are unable to save for their retirement, unable to save for housing, unable to create an emergency fund, that means that in the future, that piece of the pie that's available for discretionary spending will decrease over time, right? Which obviously then impacts the labor market. It impacts future economic growth. It impacts everybody.
Housing market.
Everything, yeah. Right? The more and more our disposable income shrinks because our inability to control our impulse spending, because it hurts not just ourselves, but everybody, because we're in a society together. The second piece is that when we talk about the impact on our FICO scores, as Michelle was talking about, so the new proposed rules will include both your on-time payment history and your delayed payments. And so there's estimates that about for 85% of the people, your credit score might not change all that much because most people are paying on time. And so it might stay the same or it might increase. But that means that for 15% of people, of U.S. consumers, that's a non-insignificant number, your credit score is going to go down because you've had a late payment, because you've had a delayed payment. And so what does that mean? It means that your ability to buy a car decreases, your ability to buy a home decreases, your ability to take out new credit decreases. We have to think about this at a macro level, not just at the individual level.
I want to have a questions about this because I think about credit card companies and how regulated they are. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot less regulation when we talk about buy now, pay later. And one of the things you mentioned, Michelle, is that you don't get a statement at the end of the month. And one of the things that used to keep you in check with a credit card is you have maximums, right? If you have a credit line of $5,000, you can't go over $5,000. And it seems to me, if it's not on your credit report, if nobody's keeping track, how do people sort of rein in overspending? And how do you make sure people don't get to a level where they owe thousands and thousands of dollars in these buy now, pay later? Who's keeping track, Michelle?
Oh, the simple answer is they don't. They don't. It is up to the consumer to keep track of how many of these loans, because they are, and I think that's how we should refer to them constantly, that it's borrowed money. And that will keep it right in your face. You are borrowing money. You have to keep track. Say what you want about credit cards, there are some guardrails. If you go over, and you actually could go over that $5,000, but then you get dinged with a higher interest rate. But mm-hmm. once you start bumping up against that, they can shut it off. They don't always do that, but most of the time they do. And so that is correct. The more retailers who allow you to do this, the more likely you'll have more of those loans out there coming out of your paycheck. And cash flow is a really big thing for me, because anything happens within any pay period. Your utility bill comes in higher than you thought. You've got kids. You forgot, oh my gosh, I got to pay their sports fee. And so if you've got a lot of your money already obligated by that next paycheck, it gives you less ability to adjust when life happens.
And I wonder, should there be some protections, should because there are protections for credit cards, there are regulations in place for that. Should buy now, pay later have more protections for consumers, Wendy?
Oh, I think the short answer is yes, period. Right now, we don't have any national legislation on buy now, pay later. If we think about our mortgages, like a mortgage lender is required to take into account your ability to pay, to look at your income, to look at your expenses and say, I cannot extend to you more debt than I think you can actually pay. That is not in place at all at the national level for buy now, pay later. these companies don't have to take into account your ability to pay. I think that's what's so critical. And I think this is where Michelle's concern stems from and my concern stems from, which is there is no guardrails here. Mm-hmm. And if you fail, that actually just increases their bottom line. Because the $15 that they will charge on a $100 purchase if you're late is higher than any credit card interest rate when you work out the math of as to what that APR would be.
Doesn't seem like a lot because it's not a big real number, mm-hmm. but it is percentage-wise a huge number.
It's over 300%, right? And so when you talk to somebody on the street and you say, would you take out a loan where if you mess up, you'd have to pay 300% APR, most people would say right. no.
But I guess the issue then for the companies would be if you add checks to this system, it loses its main edge, which is speed and convenience. That's really what distinguishes, we talked about this in the beginning, this type of financial product from everything out there, which is you can get it in a minute and bing, bang, boom, you're out the door. So how could this product continue to exist with guardrails or checks in place, Wendy?
Well, I think that's the core of the issue. I don't think most of us think that you should get credit bing, bang, boom.
Which sounds to me like an argument for these things not existing, really. I mean,
no, but we all have credit cards. We all have loans, right? Yeah. We've existed for centuries in a economy where we've had debt. We just want a little bit more guardrails for protections for the consumer.
Yeah. By the way, I want to read a couple comments. We have Hank on YouTube who says, every time I get paid, I open my Klarna app and my Affirm app the same way that I do my credit card apps to make payments, even if they're automatic payments. E. Alexander from New Jersey says, I don't give any company direct access to my checking account. Mm. Emails, isn't it ironic that while restaurants and retailers charge for using a credit card, they are subsidizing BNPL to get you to spend more? Very interesting comments there. I want to give people some practical advice because, you know, buy now, pay later is here. People going to use it. I think there probably are some things that it makes sense to use BNPL for and some things that it makes, you know, no sense to use it for. I want you to give some guidelines for that, Michelle and Wendy. So how should people be using it? What are the best ways to use it? How do you not fall into the traps? Give us some financial advice to make this the type of loan that would make your life better. Michelle.
So I start, you know, in fact, I was just having this conversation with my husband. If I would say, let's say your refrigerator goes out and you don't have the money, but you could stretch it over 4 payments, then I would say that this is a product that would help you get that needed refrigerator. I think every time you go to spend on one of these, you should ask yourself, is this a need or a want? And thirdly, I think you need to keep a spreadsheet. Now, see, that's asking a whole lot of people who don't even balance their
spreadsheet.
So this is why I have a problem with it. Because if you were managing your money, then you wouldn't even need to do this because the money would already be in your bank account and you would go ahead and pay for it all along. But I would say you would have to ask yourself, is this a need or is this a want? And just step back. Do I have a fully funded emergency fund? At least 1 month of living expenses. Ask yourself those baseline questions before you buy. I'm not going to call her name because I don't want all those fans to come after me, but that, you know, Miss Cowboy Girl, you know, ticket. Or, you know,
I was curious.
You don't want to send the hive after you?
They will come after you, so I'm not talking about your girl, but I'm just saying. I would ask those questions first before I push that button to split those payments for something that could harm you in the end.
Yeah. But the choreography is so good.
It's so wonderful. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Wendy.
Yeah, watch the video on YouTube to save yourself some money. I'm just saying.
I love you, Michelle. I think, you know, really there's 3 practical things, right? First, what you said, Michelle, about is this a need, is this a want, is so important, right? You can now go on DoorDash and order a burrito using Buy Now, Pay Later. Like, clearly that's a case where if this is your financial situation, buying something on DoorDash with that additional fee is not that. But I have a lot of empathy, which I think we should all do, recognizing that in this economy, where groceries are high, where people are feeling uncertainty about their jobs, like people are doing everything they can to manage. And so that's why I think in terms of financial advice, first I want you to think about, is this something that you need right now? And if it's something that you need, do you need it today? Mm. Because if The answer is no, we can wait a week. Why do I say this? It's because all of the studies run by our lab and others have shown that just creating temporal distance between you and a purchase decreases your likelihood of making that purchase in the first place. You realize that you
your
could do it. Your
impulsiveness erodes a little bit. Yeah.
Exactly. That's one. Two, if you are going to use these apps, stick with one. Because at the very least, then you'll have one aggregated place where you know all of the different buy now, pay later loans, as Michelle accurately says, in one place. It will help you with that spreadsheet management because at least you'll have everything in one place. And the third piece of advice I would say is as you think about your paycheck, I want you to think about how you would feel in 2 weeks when that money comes out of your account. One of the things that our lab has shown is how we think about prices fundamentally changes when we segregate them out. So a $100 purchase, when I tell you it's just $25 over 4 weeks.
You're like, oh, yeah.
You're like, I can afford $25. You mentally think about that purchase not as $100, but as something less. Mm. And so one of the ways to get around that is to think about how would you feel in 2 weeks when that $25 comes out? Making us think about our future self and grounding us in the future helps to prevent that impulse spending.
I want to thank you both for being here this hour. What a fascinating conversation. Wendy De La Rosa is an assistant professor of marketing at the Wharton School. Wendy, great to have you here.
Great to be here.
Michelle Singletary is personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Always a pleasure, Michelle.
Oh, thank you. And don't come after me. I didn't say nothing about your girl. I don't even say it because I don't, you know.
By the way, Kara, who wrote in earlier, who bought those electrical parts for her vintage camper with BNPL, sent us a photo.
Dude,
that is so amazing. You have
that
to go to the YouTube.
Awesome.
Kara, I want a tour. I want to know where you're taking this thing. I want to go with you wherever you're taking this thing. Look how cool that is.
She needs to drive that by Studio 2.
That is my dream.
Pop the horn. We'll come right outside and take a look. Gosh. I'd love to see it up close.
Thank everyone who helped make this show possible.
Thank you, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and Al Banks, Atina Kalake, engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. And from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, already thinking about another vacation.
I know.
After I just got back from one because I saw that camper.
I know. BNPL.
BNPL.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Thank you for joining us. Manage your finances responsibly. We'll be back tomorrow.